Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Durovich. Back in 2022, the midterm election saw the second highest turnout of young voters in almost three decades. Political pundits also believe the youth vote could be the key to the 2026 midterm elections. But there's a caveat. Issues like affordability, health care, and political inaction have resulted in Gen Z voters being disillusioned with both political parties. We're talking about the annual survey by Gen Forward, looking at how voters ages 18 to 42 feel about a range of political issues this hour. And our conversation begins with Kathy Cohen, principal investigator and founder of Gen Forward. Welcome to All Sides, Kathy.
Thank you.
And also in the studio with us for the hour is Jen Miller, executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Welcome back to All Sides, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kathy, let's start with you. While no group of voters is a monolith, can you provide us with this demographic snapshot of what's a Gen Z voter and a millennial voter?
Sure. When we are thinking about Gen Z, we're thinking about basically 18 to 27. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about millennials in our survey, we're thinking more like 28 to, and I would, we're going to say 42. Mm-hmm. We call them our elderly millennials. oftentimes I'll walk into a room and they're very happy to still be called millennials. And yet, you know, as you can imagine, we talk about this all the time. They are the largest segment of the working force. They're the largest segment of eligible voters. They're the most diverse generation. So they look different than boomers and others. And it's important to really kind of focus in on how they're thinking about political issues.
A lot of pollsters and pundits seem to agree that young voters are the key to winning the 2026 midterm elections. But your most recent survey of voters age 18 to 42 shows that this group is really unhappy with both Republicans and Democrats. So what do they want if they're unhappy with both political parties?
Well, you know, there are many things, but the one thing I'm going to focus on to start us off is this kind of question of affordability. Mm-hmm. Over and over again throughout this survey, kind of no matter what topic that you're asking about, they take us back to kind of questions of affordability. So, for example, if you ask what's the most important issue for the country, they say economic inequality, economic growth, and in some cases, poverty. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when we, you know, it's a nationally representative sample, but we also did an oversample, meaning asked more people from a certain segment, so from the Midwest, these questions and submitted the survey to them. So when we look at Midwesterners, and in particular Ohio, poverty is the number one issue when they think about the most important issue. Now, I'll go really quickly. When you ask about the greatest issue facing your community, then we see housing affordability coming up as the number one issue. And it is number two in Ohio, again, after poverty, even though they're really kind of neck and neck. Mm-hmm. And I always want to remind people, we give respondents maybe 25 options in terms of the greatest issues facing their community. So for one in almost five to say housing affordability, I would suggest that politicians and pundits should take that very seriously. And there are a number of other issues that point to economic issues and affordability as kind of critical ideas, concerns, problems that face young adults today.
And Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters of Ohio, let's bring you in here. Are you surprised, as someone who spends their days thinking about Ohio voters, are you surprised that poverty is number one and housing affordability number two?
You know, I unfortunately am not. So many Ohioans are struggling, and especially younger generations are struggling to afford rent, let alone think about buying a home or affording college, paying off their student loan. So we go to college campuses across the state and talk to a lot of young people, and affordability is very, very high. Mm-hmm. This generation also really cares about their neighbors, and I look forward to hearing Kathy's comments on kind of maybe some of those social issues. But unfortunately, economics are just, and finances are of primary concern.
Kathy, before we get to the social issues, this idea that poverty was number one in Ohio, housing affordability number two, but also affordability for your overall survey was high up there. It's always been that each generation wants their kids to do better than them. Is this generation feeling like that's not possible? Is that what that means?
You know, it's a mixed bag. I think one of the things that we find consistently in our surveys is that there is a sense of frustration, concern, and some sense of optimism, right? They want to believe, in fact, that there will be a way in which they will do better. But generally, they're split. When you ask, do you think, in fact, you'll do better than your parents? You see about a 50-50 split. Some say, yeah, I think I'll do better. And others say, I'm not sure I'll do better. And what we know is that this generation of millennials may be the first generation, in fact, to do worse than their parents historically, economically. So these are kind of real issues. They're not just things that kind of, as Jen said, young people are conjuring up. They are living this experience. We know that millennials and increasingly Gen Zs have carried more student debt than any other generation. They're less likely to own a home. So they're really trying to figure out how, in fact, their economic opportunities will present themselves. And then I'll just say really quickly, there is, of course, the threat of AI and the worry that, in fact, we will see increasing unemployment and the retraction of kind of entry-level jobs because of AI. So they're concerned.
Let's take a moment and dig into those social issues that Jen mentioned, Kathy. So Gen Z and millennials, they care about their community. What did your survey find when it comes to, besides affordability, what do they care about?
So we ask a set of questions, what I call the expansive state. So what should a good government provide to people? And the answer set was, maybe we should provide this to everyone, maybe just to those in need. And then the third option was individuals should secure these things in the private sector on their own. What we found was, for example, if you ask a question about should the government provide housing, people say largely just to those in need. However, if you say, should the government provide K-12 education, overwhelmingly people say that should be provided to everyone. Then if you ask something like college education, we start to see almost, I call them almost majorities, around 48%, say, yeah, we need to be providing college education to everyone. And in Ohio, it's 49%, right? Healthcare provided to everyone because everyone needs healthcare. Guaranteed monthly income, there's a real split between those who say only to those in need and those who say, yeah, maybe we should be providing this to everyone. And in fact, the plurality of Black respondents in our survey say a guaranteed monthly income should be provided to everyone, right? And we begin to see these types of services that, and I always remind people say, oh, well, we can't do that. Well, we did a lot of this during COVID-19, right? Mm-hmm. We said you couldn't evict people. We ensured, in fact, that people had utilities. And some of these young adults saw what was able to be provided by an expansive state. And I think they want those types of guarantees again so that they can have full and meaningful lives.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about an annual survey by Gen Forward looking at how voters age 18 to 42 feel about a range of political issues. And we're talking with Kathy Cohen, principal investigator and founder of Gen Forward. Also with us in the studio is Jen Miller, executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Those are a lot of issues, like whether government should have K-12 education, college, whether government should provide housing, all of these social issues. How does someone vote based on whether the government can do all of that and if they're doing all of that?
I think that's a really great question. And I think it starts with making sure that voters understand the job description. Mm. You know, I think a lot of times we see voters making decisions based on sound bites or maybe even a cult personality. And some of that is because even older voters, but especially younger voters, because we don't have as much civics in schools, they don't know what an office holder does, you know, or how, you know, this office holder would affect student loan debt, where this one, you know, at the local level may do more on affordable housing, right? Mm-hmm. So for nonpartisan groups like mine, I think we have a really important role to play, which is about connecting who in government does what, mm-hmm. and then connecting that to researching candidates.
Kathy Cohen with Gen Forward. My understanding is that it's hard to get young people to take polls and respond to polls. So how do you conduct your poll?
So we work with an incredible survey unit called NORC at the University of Chicago. They have what is called a standing panel. So a group of people who rotate in and out who are incentivized, meaning they're given money or other other reasons to take the poll. And then we also engage, this is probably more than you want, in a non-probability sample. So we are merging multiple samples. We are ensuring, in fact, that we have over samples of Black, Latinx, and Asian and Pacific Islander respondents, that we want to make sure, in fact, we have folks who are both from cities, but also from rural areas, conservatives and liberals. So there's a lot of balance. It takes a while to make sure that we have that type of representation. But, you know, I was committed to building this project because, in fact, far too often in the kind of national polls that get recognition, there are very small numbers of young people and very small numbers of young people of color. And we wanted to build something very differently.
Well, right. Because just anecdotally, my understanding of most polling is just if you answer the phone, then you're in the poll. And I don't think an 18 to 27 year old answers their phone, right? You have to text them.
That's exactly right. You have to text them. You have to engage them. You have to be in conversation. And you have to kind of explain to them why this is important for them to take. In fact, we want to make sure that we can hear their voices. Yeah.
Another number I wanted to ask you about is in your overall Gen Forward numbers, nearly 70% of those polled said they have little to no trust in the Trump administration or Congress. So
yes.
That sounds like someone to me who's not going to bother voting.
So I'm going to push back on that a bit.
Okay.
I think you're right if we say people only vote because of how they feel about the government. Mm-hmm. We know that, in fact, and Jen can speak to this, mm-hmm. right, that people are mobilized to vote, right? Mm-hmm. They are contacted by their neighbors or in the church or by one of the parties. They are asked to register. They are contacted close to the election. And so that's one thing. And the second thing is to remind people that we're asking people, how do you feel about the president? How do you feel about the parties? We know historically, young people and people in general have very little trust in those entities. And I think the third thing I would say is that if you can find a candidate, and I think we've just seen this in New York, mm-hmm. who can speak to the concerns and the issues that are kind of confronting young adults, then in fact, you can give them a sense of aspirational hope that in fact, the government can change, that it can speak to their concerns, that we can think about kind of questions of affordability and democracy. And I'm gonna do a little turn here just because there's an important data point I wanna get to, which is when we ask this question, because oftentimes people talk about affordability and then they separate it from democracy. And I think young people are telling us something very different, which is to say that you really can't have a functioning democracy without attention to affordability. Mm-hmm. So when we ask, what are the most important factors for democracy to work? Number one is free and fair elections. Yep, we would have predicted that. But number two was housing and food availability, right? And then number three was limiting the influence of money in politics. So they see all of these issues as connected. This is part of what it means to have a functioning democracy. And I think, again, if you find the candidate who can speak to the kind of broad sense of what they want from the government, their expansive idea of what democracy is and should be, then I think that candidate will mobilize young adults to the polls.
Yeah, Jen Miller, am I just jaded if I think if 70% of people have little to no trust in the presidential administration and Congress, I'm just jaded if I say they won't vote?
Well, I think what's really important here, and we find this, we take this Airstream that's decked out and super fun to college campuses across the state. And we continue to hear that young people are tired of only hearing from candidates and parties, that they feel that that's a very transactional conversation. And that's where I think educators, media, nonpartisan groups like the League really play an important part of helping, again, folks connect the issues they care about to voting, but then not stopping at voting. I think older generations often stop there. And part of the reason why they feel like they're not making a difference is because they're not necessarily showing up to City Hall or calling their lawmaker and telling them what they need and want. And I think helping young people see their power is actually teaching the full cycle of civic engagement.
All right, Kathy Cohen from Gen Forward, before we run out of time, I
Yes.
want to give you a chance to tell me some other interesting or surprising things that you found in the survey that you want to make sure our listeners know about.
Sure. I will say that, in fact, while young people are have very low
Yeah, they have that.
support, no, very low support for the president and the parties, I think they are also paying attention to what's happening in this country. And increasingly, they see a threat to how democracy should work, right? So they are concerned about the excessive power of the president. They are concerned about the work of ICE, for example, whether it is the wearing of masks, the deployment of tear gas, the deployment of the military to what they consider to be democratic cities, right? There is a sense that the democracy is in crisis. It's very clear from the numbers. But what is also really interesting is that they continue to hold a real dedication to democracy. When asked, is democracy by far the best system of government? Overwhelmingly, they say yes to that. And overwhelmingly, they say yes to democracy is in crisis. So again, I think there is the possibility of speaking to an agenda, right? Speaking or kind of presenting them with an agenda that speaks to, again, their expansive understanding of how they want democracy to work in general and how they want democracy to work in their communities and for them, and that those types of issues and articulations may in fact get them to the polls and to have greater faith in the government.
Did you find more optimism in your poll among the Gen Z part, that half, or the millennial part?
In a surprising way, there were not the kind of demarcations by generation that maybe we expected. We saw some of the differences based on race, for example. So if we go back to this idea of the expansive state or what the government should provide, our young Black respondents or our Black young adults were more often willing to say, I think the government should provide these things for everyone, right? They have a different sense of how they would like to see the government engage with people and to support people. So I think, and the kind of, if there was a consistent difference, it was based on partisanship, right? Young adult Republicans were much more likely to be supportive of the president, to not see a threat to excessive power of the presidency, and to be at some level, not a lot, but at some level more supportive of ICE.
We have been speaking with Kathy Cohen, principal investigator and founder of Gen Forward, about its annual survey of how voters age 18 to 42 feel about a range of political issues. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And staying with us is Jen Miller, executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. And coming up, we're going to talk about what's being done to engage and mobilize the youth vote here in Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Public Radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Support for WOSU comes from thousands of listeners and from Heart of Ohio Family Health, providing comprehensive wellness care with 6 health centers across Central Ohio. Patient-centered health care, one heart at a time. More information at heartofohiofamilyhealth.org.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And we're talking about the results of the annual Gen Forward survey this hour, a survey that looks at how voters age 18 to 42 feel about a range of political issues and what this could mean for future elections. And we're now going to talk about a local program that is trying to get students to vote. Joining us now is Tristan Davis, Associate Director of Student and Community Engagement at Capital University. Welcome to All Sides, Tristan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And still with us is Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Thanks for being here, Jen.
Thank you.
Tristan, what is it that you think keeps young people from getting to the polls? Why do they stay home on Election Day?
There are a few things. I think one of them is the young voters are heavily influenced by social media. And so information is accessible, but not all information is accessible and not all information is credible. So students are kind of going back and forth about, you know, what should I believe? What party should I vote for? All of those different things. And so they are following these social media influencers. They are influenced by what is on TikTok. Algorithms are changing. And so, a lot of political discourse is being, I don't even know what the term is, but they're not able to see it on social media anymore and things of that nature. And then accessibility to information on their college campus, especially for our out-of-state voters. There are a lot of laws that are being passed that influence our college students that they are not aware of when it comes to what kind of IDs can you use when you are going to register to vote. If their college campus has a on-campus polling location, transportation to a polling location, things of that nature. So Capital University is lucky enough to have one on-campus polling location. But those are the different things that are, you know, practical barriers for college students.
And so you mentioned access to information as playing a key role, but where do we get the reliable information? How do we get it to the young voters?
Yes, so that is one of the responsibilities of colleges and universities, right, to be informed, not even for their students, but also for their faculty and staff, right? We want everybody to be civically engaged. And so first, colleges and universities have to be informed. What are the things that college students need to know? And then also, how do we work with our, you know, local organizations and other community partners to get the information? Can you also repeat the question? What else do we need to know?
Well, are there examples of states that are doing a good job? Like, do you look to places that are doing a better job than we are here of getting young people to the polls and understanding what they need to do?
I think a lot of states are making great efforts. Capital University is just one of the very many colleges and universities that are a part of the All-In Campus Democracy Challenge. So it is a national coalition that we have found that we meet with quarterly. So it's not everybody from every state across the nation meeting, but Capital University meets with our athletic conference. So all of us are talking about what are the trends that are happening amongst OAC colleges, and then how can we compare those to trends that are happening in Ohio? But of course, we also meet with other colleges and universities that work with All In from Mississippi, from Georgia, from Hawaii. All of us have these coalitions on our campus that also work with All In. They are crucial to helping us create a All In action plan. So how do we ensure that we have an established action plan that talks about our leadership, our commitment, our landscape, that talks about, you know, what our campus-wide team looks like, our strategy, reporting, evaluation, and assessment, all of those different things to make sure that our efforts are efficient and that they're working. And so we've been doing a lot of things, working with our athletic departments and, you know, doing competitions amongst colleges and universities. So we're trying to kind of uplift each other because we do know that our unspoken third mission of a higher education institution is social responsibility. So we have to make sure that in addition to what you see on a webpage, as far as our mission and our values and all those different things, that you see that there is evidence of us wanting to make sure that our students, when they are, you know, first year students and they come onto our campus, that they understand that civic responsibility and duty is an expectation of our college students.
Well, speaking of that, them being, you know, the first year on campus, a lot of them are 18. I mean, have they even registered to vote before? Have they voted before? Is you in a department like yours the first, you know, the first time they're hearing where someone's saying to them, you should vote?
Great question. Great point. Yes. So luckily, civic engagement and community engagement lives within the Student Involvement Office of Capital University. So students actually hear about registering to vote when they do this bridging program called CAP 101. So students come to summer orientation and then they are enrolled in this CAP 101 program. It kind of is the orientation after summer orientation before their welcome weekend or their first weekend on their college campus that introduces them to student organizations, how to get your parking pass, but also how do you register to vote? Because we have an on-campus polling location. It is a best practice for you to update your voter registration whenever you move, whether it is from your home to your college campus, back home, if you're transferring campuses, all those different things, you should update your registration. So we have built that into the platform that students can register for the first time or update their registration. And then, of course, we have it's fortunate that a lot of civic holidays fall within that fall semester. So students are hearing from us quite a bit for National Voter Registration Day, National Voter Education Week, Constitution Day. We have started hashtag Comets Vote, which is an initiative to make sure that our students become lifelong voters. And how do we do that? And so they are hearing from us, you know, within those first 90 days of their first semester of college.
Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters of Ohio, I want to bring you in here to ask you about that idea of the 18-year-old and whether or not their first exposure to the idea of voting happens on their college campus. Or do you find if you grew up in a house where the parents vote, then your parents make sure you vote? Like, do you know that?
Yeah, actually, so voting is contagious. There's a Cambridge study that shows that people in households with consistent voters are 60% more likely to vote. Peer-to-peer conversations is particularly important with young people as well. 79% of young people, this is a Harvard poll, say that they were more likely to vote if they knew that their friends were going to, in comparison to 35% if they didn't think their peers would. Ohio does trail other states. So 20% of Ohio youth report having trouble getting registered to vote. Rural and low-income and minority youth are even less likely to have the ability to register to vote at school or to learn about civics. One of the things we do is we actually have volunteers that go to high schools across the state and spend a day talking about civics and getting young people registered. But there's much more we can do. I agree wholeheartedly with Tristan that we have a lot of barriers. And that barrier starts with registration, and we can see it in the numbers. So, for example, 18-year-olds in Michigan, according to the Civics Center, are 84% of Michigan 18-year-olds are registered or were registered this fall. Ohio was 51%.
51%.
That is a lot less 30% less than the state up north. Even Georgia has a higher registration rate among 18-year-olds than Ohio.
What is Michigan doing to get that many 18-year-olds to register to vote? I mean, that's I'm impressed. Like, Do you know?
I mean, I think it's multiple things, but I think that we have to think about the fact that Michigan has passed a lot of pro-voter policies that, by the way, don't make Michigan's results less secure. It just makes it more accessible. On the other hand, Ohio continues to add more and more barriers to the ballot box. But even little things like Tristan had discussed, automatic voter registration or pre-registration, these are things that could be really helpful. Where if maybe when we engage with a young person and they're 16 and they could actually sign a card asking to be pre-registered as soon as they turn 18, what we do is we send them a text. If they if they opt in, we'll send them a happy birthday text with instructions on how to register. But we see these barriers starting with registration and going throughout the entire voting process, unfortunately, which is why I really do appreciate the Gen Forward research that looks at both Gen Z and Millennial, because neither population is really accessing their electoral power the way older generations are in Ohio.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about what's being done to engage and mobilize the youth vote in Ohio with Tristan Davis, Associate Director of Student and Community Engagement at Capital University, and Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. And Tristan, if you don't know the answer to this, Jen might, but talk to me about what you said about registering to vote when you come to college. So there's probably two different things if you come from another state versus somewhere else in Ohio, but if your driver's license says your home address, do you have to vote where your driver's license says you have to vote?
No, you do not.
Okay, educate me. Go ahead.
Yes. So we, on a college campus, you still have your on college campus address. So students can also just register with their college address. So they will still get the correspondence saying that your polling location is your college campus. Mm-hmm. And that is just how they would move forward with doing that. That's how Capital University works. I know Ohio State University also has their own college polling location.
Sure.
Christian.
So college students are a unique population where they get to decide. Do they register at whatever home is? Maybe that's a parent address. Or do they register at their college address? Mm. So they're the only group that gets to decide that. But you also said something else that's really important that I want every Ohioan to know. We have the strictest voter ID laws in the country now. But one thing that never has to happen, you do have to, your voter ID address does not have to match for anyone, does not have to match your registration address. You just have to have an unexpired driver's license, state ID, U.S. Veteran ID, active duty military ID, or passport. And your address does not have to, as long as it's unexpired, your address does not have to match your registration.
Okay. So if election day, which is a Tuesday, and you're not going to be able to drive home, say you go to Capital University, but you're from Toledo, and that's a, you know, almost 3-hour drive. So you decide you want to vote in the governor's race, and you want so you would need to change your voter registration to be your Capital address rather than your Toledo address. I'm trying to make up an example.
So sometimes we actually just encourage for them to fill out an application for an absentee ballot, because a lot of people want to still vote in their home county. Mm-hmm. So we try to really push that absentee ballot application process for them, because we also have a lot of students who are still from Central Ohio, and they just are not able to get out of class to go to Gahanna or Pickerington or Dublin. So what do you do if you cannot go home, you know, drive 20 minutes to go vote? You fill out at least an absentee ballot, or you go vote early. Mm. We have reading days, like at least in the spring semester when we're talking about the spring election, you know, or you have fall break and all those different things. You can go and vote early if you do not want to fill out the absentee ballot application.
So, Tristan, we talked earlier a little bit about young voters being disillusioned with both political parties, saying that, you know, both political parties are out of touch with them. And so what, in your opinion, what do you think the biggest issues are for young voters?
There are a lot of things that they are concerned about. I think that young voters are more concerned about a lot of long-term or future-oriented issues, as opposed to older voters who are kind of like, what is happening next, you know, as it pertains to retirement or healthcare or things of that nature, where students are like, okay, inflation and SNAP benefits have been paused, immigration policies, racial justice, gender equality, you know, all of those different things. They spread across a lot of social, economic, and political issues. So I don't think there is really one thing, because there are multiple issues that impact their college experience.
And whether or not they're disillusioned with both political parties, if they wish there was a third party, I mean, we have two dominant parties, Republicans and Democrats. Are mobilizing tactics at Capitol similar? Do you have the Republican group or club and the Democrat club? Are they both active?
The college Republicans are. I do not think our college Democrats are at the moment. And we also used to have a socialist student organization. And so they operate how they do. They work with our office sometimes when it comes to registering students to vote. We ask for them to have like a meeting before hosting a voter registration event to make sure that they are spreading information that is aligned with the university's civic engagement initiatives and efforts. So, you know, we have Capital University has a university-specific voter registration portal. Please use this portal. Please share this information. Please share information about these civic holidays, all those different things. So they have their own agenda, but we make sure that they are aligned with the university. We also have different opportunities for students to come together for like informal forums to talk about, you know, things that are impacting their college experience, whether it's things that are happening specifically at Capital University, in the city of Bexley, in the city of Columbus, Ohio. We have a growing international student population. So they are sharing things that are happening in their home countries and how it might mirror what is happening in America, things that they want their peers to know, all of those different things. So we're learning about the global politics, right, and not just what is happening in America, because we're hoping that getting those global perspectives will help make our students have more well-rounded perspectives and opinions and things of that nature. And so we have these forums, and there are always staff present because we want our students to learn how to mobilize. It is our responsibility to help guide them to safely mobilize, because our young people are very much so involved in movements. They are very vocal about this, right? And so we have seen across the nation colleges and universities punishing their students for, you know, activism, right? And we don't want that. We want our students to do this. But how do you do it safely? How do you make sure that you are protecting yourself and others? And so we allow them to use their voices to come together to talk about the things that are impacting their college experiences. What can they do about it? One of those things being to vote. And then what are things that, you know, they want us staff and faculty and administrators to know so we can better change campus culture for them as it pertains to, you know, what professional staff can do. So we make sure that students also understand what student mobilization can do, and then what do they need for us to carry up the chain for them.
Before I let you go, one final question. Do you hear from students at your university that if they saw younger political candidates, they might be more enthused? Do you ever hear about that?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
They'll accept the political candidates that are there?
No, not that either.
Not that either. All right.
And so I think that, you know, they understand that we have these two main political parties. They don't understand, sometimes, not everybody, some students do, of course, that there are other political parties, and that if you are voting for one Democrat candidate, that you don't have to vote, you know, Democrat all the way down the ballot, and same for Republican. Like, vote for the person, not the party, is what I try to tell them. And so there's just a lot of learning and growing there. And I'll say this very quickly. When I first got to Capital University and was working in civic engagement, I learned that the 18 to 24 age group had the lowest voter turnout on our campus and in the city of Bexley. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. You are the largest group. So I was going from class to class and was like, what is the issue here? And students started telling me, we just don't know how to vote. Mind you, this is in 2021. They were like, we don't know how to vote. And I said, you know, this is your first semester post pandemic. And before that, you were in middle school. So, you probably wouldn't know how to vote. You didn't get to go to the library.
And you couldn't go with your parents.
You couldn't go with your parents. You didn't do the mock election in your school library like we did when we were in elementary and middle school and things of that nature.
So it was a matter of starting from square one. So during National Voter Education Week, we would bring the Board of Elections and do a voter simulation. So they would bring a voting machine. The League of Women Voters of Metro Columbus would send volunteers to serve as poll workers for this simulation, because students were like, am I allowed to talk to a poll worker? Is that cheating? What is happening here? How do I put my ballot in? All of those different things. So it's a matter of, you know, just starting from square one, being able to teach and to learn from our students and with our students.
We've been speaking with Tristan Davis, Associate Director of Student and Community Engagement at Capital University. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about some ballot barriers and turnout stats and voting rights with Jen Miller from the League of Women Voters. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Public Radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Young voters could be the key to which political parties need to win big in the 2026 midterms. But a new poll finds that those young voters don't like either political party very much. Disillusionment and inaction from both political parties has resulted in voter apathy. We are talking this hour about the results of an annual Gen Forward survey. The survey looked at how voters age 18 to 42 feel about a range of political issues and what it could mean for future elections. Still with us is Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Thanks for staying with us, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
So I had some numbers that said that there was an increase in youth voter turnout back in 2018, that midterm election. So what drove that and what are we seeing since then?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. I don't know if it's what drove it in 2018 or if it's just the disruption with the pandemic, which is one of the things that Tristan talked about, right? She also talked about the ever-changing kind of regulations around voting that are creating more barriers, especially for new or inexperienced voters. But, you know, 2020 changed the way we voted, and then the legislature continues to change the way we vote in Ohio. And confusion is the number one enemy of turnout. And we even heard that from Tristan, right, at Capital University.
Well, she mentioned people not knowing how to vote. And I remember my first couple of times voting, there was an election where there were a ton of candidates and I was having trouble remembering the names of who I wanted, right? It was just too much on the ballot. And I didn't know whether I was allowed to like write it down and take it with me. Like, can you take notes?
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. We have something called Vote 411, which is now our voter guide. The League is known for our voter guide nationally. It actually started out of Cleveland in the 1920s. A lot of people don't know that. So, yay, Ohio. But actually, if you go on Vote 411 and you put your address in, you can research the candidates. You actually can select the one you like and print that out and take that to the polls with you. But you are correct that folks just don't know all the ropes. And that's first. We need to make our voting plan.
Yeah, her saying, can I talk to a poll worker? Is that cheating? Like, that was very interesting to me because that's what they're there for, to answer questions, right?
And it actually reminds me, I just was a guest lecturer at University of Maryland, actually with public policy students, and many of them did not even know that they could request a meeting with their lawmaker. And these are the things that worry me, because if we're not looking at democracy as a participatory sport, from registration to voting to sharing your needs with your elected officials, we're not going to be able to really get everything that democracy has to offer.
We had an email come in from Paul, and he said that one year, whenever he voted for the first time, he was eligible. They had an Ohio law where you could register and vote on Election Day on the same day. So that was allowed at some point here in Ohio, he says. Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. It was very brief, and it was Golden Week. And you know, Michigan does have same-day registration, so that's one of those
Oh, maybe
things.
That got more young people. Okay.
So at the end of the day, the way Ohio works is it's 30 days before Election Day is your voter registration deadline. Best practice is every voter, regardless of age group, to check their registration. You know, if you've just filled out your form, it's possible that they couldn't read something and it's actually been entered wrong, right? Or not entered at all. If you've moved, you might not think about updating your registration. And Tristan mentioned that, right? Like, I've heard people say, the government knows where I live when I pay my taxes. I don't understand why I need to re-register. This is in Ohio, this is another one of those barriers that we don't have automated voter registration that would update our registration.
He also said that all registered voters in Colorado, for example, receive a mail-in ballot by default. So you don't. But here you have to request one.
Yeah. I mean, I like our methodology in one way because more choices can mean more access, except it's confusing. Mm. And that's why we spend so much time talking about a voting plan. Decide which method is best for you and then make sure you understand those rules. So absentee voting is a very great way if you think you're going to have a hard time getting to the early vote center or to your neighborhood polling location. It's also great if you don't have that voter ID because you prove your identity twice, but you can do it with the your signature and the last four of your social and your date of birth and those things. Early voting is particularly great if you want to do it as a family or you want to do it as a friend group because you don't all need to be in the same polling location and you can, you know. So I think that's a particularly great way and then go out to eat afterwards, right? Some folks really like going to their neighborhood polling location. Polling locations change. Make sure that it's the same every election before you leave the house. Make sure you have everything. But making a voting plan is critical. And I would encourage every listener to do this with two populations, especially our younger, inexperienced populations and our senior citizens. Why? Because senior citizens have probably voted the same way for a long time and the rules just keep changing on them, and our inexperienced voters for the same reason.
Let's talk about the rules just keep changing. We only have a few minutes because we're running short on time, but what are your biggest concerns right now when it comes to future voting in Ohio?
We keep having unfunded mandates on our hardworking boards of elections. So the legislature keeps changing the rules and not funding them. And at the same time, the federal government has almost obliterated local elections funding. And so we have elections officials who are overworked, underpaid, and changes. And so we keep hearing lawmakers say, well, yeah, but they do a great job educating. Not if they don't have the capacity, right? Mm-hmm. I am concerned first and foremost about our boards of elections having what they need to run elections well and also take care of their people because they're public servants.
Mm. And has there anything that has changed recently that you're basically I'm thinking about a bill that's on Governor DeWine's desk right now.
Yeah.
Which would do away with the 4-day grace period, which for a mailed in absentee ballot. So ballots postmarked on Election Day still count, but even right now, if they arrive at the Board of Elections a few days later, they will be counted. But
slight correction.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So right now they have to be postmarked the day before the election. And as long as they get there within 4 days after Election Day and everything else is correct with them, they count.
Okay.
This would throw out thousands of ballots for folks that have done nothing wrong. It's just that the mail is moving slow. And we know that the mail can sometimes take weeks. Other times it gets there the next day. We've all seen this. This isn't our mail carrier's fault. This is that the Postal Service is not funded the way it used to be. And that's why we're asking the governor to veto this.
And then we have 2 minutes left. There's a case before the U.S. Supreme Court related to redistricting. It could significantly weaken a part of the Voting Rights Act by limiting race consideration in redistricting. It could impact minority voting power. Your thoughts on this?
In general, I think every voter in the United States is harmed by gerrymandering, and whether that's partisan or racial gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see so many people pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a national policy that makes sure that politicians cannot rig lines to benefit themselves, their friends, their party, or particular racial groups.
And you've done this for a long time. Have you heard so much in the news about redistricting? I mean, all these states redrawing lines, going back and forth. It's in the courts. Have you ever heard this much talk about maps?
No, and it's exciting for us. Our campaign started in the 60s. We have fought Republicans and Democrats in Ohio for gerrymandering. And I'm excited to see everyone participate. And this is about civic education. This is how we use democracy to save democracy. Everybody register, everybody vote, and then everybody call your elected officials and tell them you don't want gerrymandering at any level of government.
We have been talking with Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Thank you so much for joining us this hour today.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, a lot of good voter information in the show today. I love when you correct me too, Jen. That was wonderful. You can listen back at WOSU.org/All Sides, and you can subscribe to the podcast, and every episode is in our mobile app. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.